Doom Patrol, Negative Man, Elastigirl, Robot Man.
Someone wants the Doom Patrol reunited.
Your every word and action
is being broadcast across the planet.
Now, Monsieur Mana!
Well done, my Doom Patrol. Well done.
It is too late for you, Calder. Your beloved patrol is doomed.
Hello, and welcome to Waiting for Doom, the Doom Patrol podcast.
Yes, that's us. Hello, I'm Mike. You can find me on Twitter at AvantGarve. You can reach us at waitingfordoom@gmail.com or on the Waiting for Doom Facebook page. You can also make contact via mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com, which is run by our fellow Doom bro, Doug Zavisha. And all our episodes are available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and podbean.com.
I'm Paul. You can find me on Twitter at reading_Hicks. And we also have a sentient show Twitter account, which is Wilfred at WFDPod.
Hello, humans.
And we are sponsored by Comicosity, the site for comic stuff.
That's right. This week, I enjoyed reading an interview that young Terrence Sage did with the writer Al Ewing, who's doing a ton of work with Marvel these days. Stuff like US Avengers, Ultimates 2, although I'm wondering if it's Ultimates Squared, the way the logo is set out. Another Inhumans book called Royals, and he's got an upcoming Rocket Raccoon book.
So, wow.
Yeah, which looks kind of like more like a crime heist book than you know, spacefaring adventure, but it's aliens in sunglasses and suit and ties sort of thing, so... Who knows? But yeah, that was an interesting article. So yeah, check that out for more comic goodness on comicosity.com.
Wow, they're really pushing the Guardians stuff at the moment. There's so many Guardians of the Galaxy tie-ins and comics. And
yeah, there's another Groot book coming out too.
On Groot
or something. Yeah.
I think it's out.
Well, there you go. I might be a little bit behind on comics, but yeah, whatever. Anyway, Paul, how's your week in comics and stuff been?
Oh, it's been okay, but I want to talk about a movie trailer. I watched a movie trailer today, and it made me go, woo, I want to see that film. This is Luc Besson. He is the French director. He has made a film called Valerian, which is based on a French graphic novel. And the new trailer is the best thing ever.
Wow.
I'm more excited for this film than I am for Star Wars.
Wow. I've actually got that graphic novel sitting in my tree pile. I bought it like a year ago or something, just out of sheer curiosity. But the guy behind the counter heaped nothing but praise upon it, and I've flicking through it. It's a gorgeous book, yeah. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to see on the big screen.
Yeah, well, this trailer, I mean, I'd be even tempted to go and find a 3D cinema for this one.
Wow.
Our local cinema isn't 3D, but this trailer was amazing. There's a bit where he puts on this like spacesuit. This is the character Valerian, mm-hmm. who's played by Norman Osborn. No. Harry Osborn, yeah. And he's teamed up with the Enchantress. So right. I don't know their names anyway. But yeah, and he puts on this suit and he goes running down this corridor and he runs through a wall and then runs through another wall and then suddenly he's in water and then he's flying. He activates rocket boots and he's zooming through the water and then he smashes into another wall and then he's out in space and then he's shooting this gun that makes like sort of force field lily pads inside in front of him, which he can jump on, and then he starts running through space on these lily pads, and then he's on another spaceship or something, and it's all one shot, and it's insane, and I love it.
And he's very big on the visuals, Luc Besson. Yes,
Back to the Fifth Element and things like that.
Yeah.
So really looking forward to this film. Probably more excited for that than anything, except maybe Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman.
Oh, yeah, Wonder Woman opens this week. Oh,
yeah, and I should tell everyone this is a women's-only podcast this week. So if you're a man, please leave, and we'll get a woman in to tell you what happens. And
so are we allowed to continue on with the show, seeing that we are not women?
Well, yes. Yes, otherwise this doesn't work at all.
Not at all. God. Yeah.
So, shout out to Ruth Sullivan, who's the only one left. Hello. Actually, if there are other women listening to a show, we'd love to know that.
We would.
Yeah. I mean, I think Laurel might listen, Mountain Flower one. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But other than that, I don't know. Are there any women out there? Is it just a sausage fest every week? Who knows?
Yes. Yes, ladies, give us a wave online somehow. Let us know you're listening.
Yeah. What about you, Mike? Did you have a week in anything?
Actually, I have read something. I've read a graphic novel, I'll have you know.
Oh.
And it's called Amazing, Fantastic, Incredible.
Oh.
And it's actually the memoirs of Stan Lee.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yes.
Excelsior.
Excelsior, indeed. So this is written by Stan along with Peter David, and the art's by Colleen Doran. And it's an interesting read all about his life. It came out 2015, so it's a couple of years old, but it covers everything up until that point, everything he's done, and you know how he got his inspiration and other ventures he went into, and the rise and fall of Marvel over its many different owners throughout the years. And of course he gets some not so subtle digs in at DC along the way, you know. That doesn't surprise me. But yeah, he's got a bit of an ego on him, but
oh, that's never come through before.
No. but you know, you got to tip your hat to him. All the creations he did come up with for Marvel, and yeah, he kind of, you know, it comes across that in some way he feels a bit bad that the artists that he worked with, like, you know, Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko, didn't get more praise and sort of more recognition for their involvement in his books. So he does voice some regrets about that sort of thing, but then he quickly moves on, you know, with the rest of his life story. So it was an interesting read, you know.
Oh, it's very interesting too, because DC have got so many things planned to celebrate Kirby's birthday this year, but Marvel, nothing.
No, they'll just be relaunching a title with a new number one.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Anyway, let's go and have a look at what's going down on Darrington Way, shall we?
We shall. Okay, things have been fairly quiet, I would say, on Darrington Wayfront. You know, it's quite a big week for them. This is the first Young Animal trade coming out this week, and it is the Doom Patrol trade of Brick by Brick.
Hooray!
The six issues. You planning to pick this one up, Mike?
Finances willing, yes.
Yeah. Mine's on the way. I get everything by mail. So mine is winging its way towards me. So, and given that I live in the country and the mail lady does weird things with our mail, it could be another week. No, seriously, right. She only delivers the mail 3 days a week. And right. So, but the mail that she delivers on Monday is the mail that she picked up at the end of her run on Friday.
Right.
So we get the mail that came into the post office on Friday. We get that on Monday. The stuff that arrived on Monday, we get that on Wednesday. And on Friday, we'll get the stuff that came on like Tuesday. And you know, it's weird. Anyway, don't live in the country, folks. Right. Actually, it's good. You can walk around nude around your house.
But, God, again.
Not that I'd do that. But
never.
No. Anyway. Other news from Gerard Way, he who writes Doom Patrol, he sent out a picture from Doom Patrol number 7, which is the next issue, which is going to be drawn by Mike Allred, and it's the chief, looks like in a corner near a pot plant with binoculars.
So maybe he was the one looking at Larry Traynor.
Maybe. Yeah, we could only speculate what he's looking at. Yes, it looks like he is out of the dreamscape, perhaps.
Finally.
In the real world, considering the real world might have pot plants. And this is, who knows? Let's wait and see.
Yes.
Or let's speculate wildly. Let's do fanfic. No, we'll wait and see. That's all. That's all I got.
Oh, okay. Short and sweet.
Yeah. But Nick Darrington keeps churning out fabulous art. He did a picture of Robot Man. So I was lying when I said that's all I've got.
Okay. Right.
And he said, Robot Man loves you. And Wilfred professed love for Robot Man.
That's, you know, not surprising. You know, these inorganic beings, you know, looking out for one each other.
It's probably disregarding the man aspect and just, you know, in love with robot.
Probably.
Probably. Anyway, that's all I got. Is that ticking?
It is ticking. Hey, look, Paul, it's the doom clock.
Which way? Over there?
Yeah, behind you.
Oh, okay.
So yes, looking upon the face of the mighty Doom Clock hiding behind Paul over there, we can see that the last issue of a Doom Patrol book we had came out only 5 weeks ago, issue 6 of volume 6, which we covered back in episode 92 and showed the Vectra's plans for Danny Burgers being destroyed and the Patrol being reunited, hooray, for the most part, at this stage. There'll probably be more members joining. Who knows? Issue 7 of Volume 6 is due out July 26th, so only 8 weeks away.
Yeah. So. And I predict it will be on time. It will not be late. This book is no longer late.
It'd be such a kick in the nuts if it was late.
Yeah, or a punch in the boob for the women listeners.
Yes. Yes, sorry. Equal opportunity pain. Anyway, this week in Doom Patrol history, going on sale for a mere 12 cents on June 6th of 1965, with the cover date of August of that year, was Doom Patrol number 97 from Volume 1 by Arnold Drake and Bruno Premiani. This issue was titled The War Against the Mind Slaves, and it continued the story that began in issue 96, which itself is we made kind of famous for because of the giant attacking jukebox and its a ree-dee-doo sound. And yes, it showed the Brotherhood of Evil joining forces with both Gygax and General Immortus so that they could take over the world via mind control. And in other hilarity, it also showed Mento asking to join the patrol and being rejected.
Oh.
Poor Mento. He was actually blackballed by Rita, of all people. So.
Right, yeah. Oh, she knows him well.
Yeah, well, she would. We covered both of these issues all the way back in episode 25 from July of 2015, so you can check that one out for more. And that is it for the Doom Clock this week.
Hello, I'm Mark Sweeney, and I record a group of comics fan podcast features under the name I'm the Gun. I've been asked so many times about such a ridiculous sounding name. Scratch that. Someone once asked me about such a ridiculous sounding name and where it came from. Well, I will answer that right here. I'm the Gun was the catchphrase, the battle cry, the mantra of an obscure DC Comics war hero introduced back in the mid-60s, Steve Savage the Balloon Buster. Steve Savage was the first subject of I'm the Gun when I began it as a blog, and Savage is a great example of the kind of story, the kind of character I like to cover on the show. I'm the Gun lives in the third string. Fourth string. I love the C-listers and the D-listers. In the age of the trade and the omnibus, I hope to champion the underappreciated and the uncollected. And I do this on features like ITG's ABCs, in which I look at shorts found in anthology titles and in backup stories, Shanna Showcase, on which I index the significant solo appearances of Marvel Comics' greatest jungle queen, Shanna the She-Devil, Reboot Review, where I'm looking at the uncollected adventures of the post-Zero Hour Legion of Superheroes, and Where's the Trade, in which I ask the rhetorical titular question and shine a light on some favorite run or title that has yet to be reprinted. Along the way, other odds and ends may find their way into the feed, so if this sounds at all interesting to you, I encourage you to check the show out on iTunes, on Google Play, or at its home on the blog, imthegun.blogspot.com. That's I'm the Gun, the comics podcast named after the most famous catchphrase or battle cry in comics. After Up, Up, and Away, and Avengers Assemble, and Shazam, Suffering Sappho, it's Clobbering Time, Long Live the Legion, Hawkeye, Flame On, Excelsior, in Brightest Day, in Blackest Night. Hulk smash.
And so now it's time for Doomsplaining, and this week we are looking at a mini-series from 2008 called DC Universe Decisions, which gets a little bit political. And Paul, tell us all about DC Universe Decisions.
Yeah, now this is a weird one, and it reflects a weird time that DC was going through. So, you remember around Infinite Crisis, and DC did this great lead up, and they had, you know, the countdown to Infinite Crisis, and they had all these mini series, and everyone was really into it. It was really mm-hmm. good. Yep. And then they came out of that with 52, yep. and that was really good, and everyone really loved that. DC tried to do it all again in the lead up to Final Crisis, and they did everything the opposite of good. So, pretty much the DC Universe was a big mess at this time. So they'd done Countdown, which turned out to be Countdown to Final Crisis, which was a terrible series. No one liked it. And then Final Crisis came out, which is pretty good. I think it stands pretty well. But there was just a lot of weird stuff going on in the DC Universe. Like, you know, the Justice League was being written by Brad Meltzer, and it wasn't really good. Mm-hmm. And then they swapped teams out and different people came on, and it was, you know, no one was writing the comics they wanted to, and no one seemed to be doing what they wanted to do across the board. But in the midst of this, DC thought, let's do a 4-issue miniseries about politics. And they said, you know, these things that never happen is the superheroes and politics coming together. That sounds like a winner. So they did a comic called DC Universe Decisions, and it was 4 issues. It came out, it shipped bi-weekly, I think. So it came out November 2008. It was the cover date, but the actual date was the 10th of September 2008. And it went all the way through till the end of October. Mm-hmm. So the 4 issues came out. They had beautiful sort of semi-computer painted art covers by Stefan Rux. I'm probably getting that name wrong, but he's an artist, judging by the art, yes.
Right, yeah. That's a fair assumption to make, yes.
Yeah, and this series was written by Bill Willingham and Judd Winnick, and we don't know who did what, but they seem to swap depending on which issue. So one says Bill Willingham first, the second one says Judd Winnick first, etc. And I think that's just to share the blame.
Right.
Because this is not a good comic particularly. But why are we covering it? What's wrong with us? Why are we doing this? And one of the things that I didn't know about this comic till someone tweeted a picture, and it was Robot Man from a comic. And I asked them, what's that from? And they said, DC Universe Decisions. And I said, oh, Robot Man's in it. Oh, I didn't know that. And they went, oh. And I told my wife, and she said, shut up, I don't care. And then, anyway, so I think one of those BOGO sales came up on Comixology, and the buy one, get one free.
Mm-hmm.
They do them, you know, once a year. Yep. I think it's, you know, the Black Friday, you know, the shopping day, whatever that is.
That's Black Friday in the States.
Black Friday, yeah. Yeah, so I took advantage of that, and I bought all 4 issues, and I gave them a read and thought, oh, yeah, there's enough Doom Patrol-ish stuff in this that we ought to cover it. So I'll take you through the issues. I'll go through the whole series at once, but I'll have reactions. You haven't read this, have you, Mike?
I have not read this, no. I did see that it is on Comixology, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to wait until I hear Paul's yay or nay on it.
Yeah, okay,
cool. Before I dive into it, so no pressure.
Yeah, and I've done this super short synopsis. That's
fine.
Okay. Anyway, so presidential candidates are being targeted by a killer. The assassination method is regular people. Longtime supporters are inexplicably becoming suicide bombers. The Justice League split up to protect individual candidates on both sides of the political landscape. After saving a Democrat, a Brewster, Green Arrow decides to formally endorse the man. And for the first time ever in the DC Universe, superheroes have entered the political debate. Batman and Superman determined that there are over 300 metahumans with the ability to control innocence. Okay, that's the first issue, basically. But, right. At the beginning, it's got, you know, what's more wacky than a suicide bombing at this time? You know?
Oh, look, topical.
Yeah. It's so, anyway. So there's a political rally. I think it's a Republican candidate. On the outside of American politics, it's hard for us to, you know, immediately see what's what.
Mm.
So I did ask Doug Zavisha, my friend, Doug, our friend, to give me a little bit of political rundown on what was happening in 2008. And this was when Barack Obama got elected, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was coming off Republicans being in power, and mm-hmm. People were fairly disillusioned at this point with, looking after the rich and stuff.
Yep.
Yep. Anyway. It's good to see everything's changed.
For sure. Yeah.
Anyway, there's a woman pushing through the crowd trying to get to the stage, and she actually works for this candidate. So, but the bodyguard who intercepts her whips off a mask, and it's a Robot Man. He's disguised himself as a regular man.
Oh.
A man. Oh.
That's man it, who was up man.
Yeah, but he's wrestling with this woman trying to keep her away from the stage, and she's going, what's happening? Why am I here? And then the bomb goes off and he gets blown in half. Take a drink. Big drink. And then we see, you know, the Justice League analyzing it afterwards. So Superman and Batman are interrogating Robot Man, trying to work out what happened. And they trace Green Arrow and Green Lantern, Hal Jordan. They fly off to trace the bomb to its source, and they find this bomb-making cell. And it looks like all the political candidates have a photo on the wall and, you know, some angry writing. So they go, okay, everyone's a target. And they start to split up the Justice League. Robot Man's fixed by this day, so he gets to hang out with the Justice League. Yeah. And... it's, yeah, so it's the sort of Brad Meltzer era Justice League with Vixen and Red Arrow, or Speedy, as we used to call him before he became Speedy. Yeah, anyway. And, yeah, Black Canary. Okay. Hawk. There's a Hawk person there, Hawk woman. Yeah, so that's all pretty cool. Yeah, they all decide they will split up and look after different candidates. And Green Arrow says, you know, can we have a choice? Because I don't want to go and protect someone whose politics I disagree with. And they're like, oh, would you let them die? And he's like, no, I just don't want to hear their crap while I'm, you know. So he's political.
Ooh.
But Superman's like, oh, this political stuff is a concern. Anyway. Anyway, into the second issue. After Green Arrow's Democratic open support, Guy Gardner throws his support to a Republican, and soon all the types of minor heroes are openly supporting different candidates, leading to schisms in their ranks. Robin works with Robot Man on narrowing the extensive list of potential culprits. So who could be doing these mind controls? So he works out an algorithm, say these people can't be doing it because they're, you know, off planet or in jail or dead or things like that. And another assassination attempt bombing is foiled, but a bodyguard suddenly goes from protecting his man to attempting to kill him. And this bodyguard dies in a hail of returned gunfire. And as Superman and Green Lantern discuss the worrying events, they see Bruce Wayne has thrown his support to another candidate.
Oh, dear.
So, yeah, what's going on here is basically... lots of minor characters are popping up and saying, oh, I really like this candidate, etc. And I couldn't see any clear analogues to real politicians at all.
Okay.
So everyone's sort of made up, but, everyone's in to have a say who they like, etc. So, you know, if you ever wanted to know what Vixen thinks or, you know, Hawkman, and this is the comp for you.
Which way they lean politically.
Yeah.
Interesting they paired Robot Man with Robin.
Yeah, I don't think that's ever happened before.
No.
Yeah, it's quite interesting. I get it from the writing point of view that Robin can't work at his computer alone. He has to explain what he's doing.
Right.
So Robot Man just ends up being the person that he explains it to, which is why he's put there. Okay. But notable in this issue is Hal Jordan and Oliver Queen, Green Arrow. They have a punch-up disagreeing over Ollie supporting a candidate openly.
Wow.
And it's like, you know, oh, this has changed everything. And then the media is all over this. So Lois Lane gets pulled off being a newspaper reporter to becoming a television reporter so she can go interview candidates, which, yes. And she has really weird chats with Clark Kent, Superman, her husband, at this point, saying, you know, what do you think about politics? Who are you going to vote for? And he's like, well, this is a very private thing and I don't like talking to you about it.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it's like, clop, 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 clop. What's that? It's Superman on his high horse.
Curse his neutral heart.
Yes. Anyway, in the next issue, Wonder Woman has carefully aligned herself with another candidate on the basis of support for shared goals. So she's not saying, I support you, but I support the stuff that you support.
Right.
And as more and more heroes become linked to politicians, Superman foils another assassination attempt via a bomb in a suitcase left under a podium, but away from the public. So he stops the bomb. He sits on it, basically.
Right.
But away from the public, the heroes analyze the incident. The suitcase was put there by the target. So the politician himself put his own suitcase there. Ooh. With a bomb in it. Yeah.
Okay.
And Batman deduces that the killer can possess someone, but the use of time delay bombs proves that the killer can't risk possessing someone when they die. So the killer has to get away.
Ooh.
So he can't ride the person to their death. He has to, you know, not
sever the link. Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
And by this stage, and through logical elimination, there are only two metahumans it could be. But Batman says it's only one, because Dead Man, being already dead, can be inside someone when they die without any ill effect. The heroes know who it is, but they don't tell the readers at this point. And the heroes gather at a democratic rally prepared for the killer's methods now that they know his identity. As the killer prepares to strike, the heroes intervene and they tackle people in the crowd, but the killer is jumping from body to body and there's a struggle. And Green Lantern, Hal Jordan, gets his protective eyewear cracked, leaving him under the control of Jericho from the Teen Titans.
No.
Yes.
Oh my God. Wow.
Yeah.
That's a bit, I don't know. Right. Now I can suddenly see why you think the way you do about this series.
Now, this was an era where the Teen Titans was like DC's worst comic. Wow. It was, you know, it was getting, I don't know, I think it was being so editorially interfered with. Geoff Johns had a really good run, and then they brought in all these people like Sean McKeever and I think Gail Simone wrote a little bit of it, but none of them got free reign, and they're all restricted and the stories were all interfered with. And one of the things that they did at this point was make Jericho a baddie.
Right.
Don't know why.
Because he was so popular as a good guy.
Yeah, but he's got short hair. He doesn't have the afro anymore.
Oh, wow, he really has gone bad then if he's got...
Well, he's got a little bit of mutton chops, but he's got a close-cut haircut. And, yeah.
Okay.
But, okay.
Wow.
Right. Anyway, I'll take you through the last issue. So Green Lantern, possessed by Jericho, unleashes a swarm of emerald tiger constructs on the gathered heroes. Ooh, tigers.
Tigers. What? Tigers.
Lots of them. He slips away in the confusion to confront and kill the candidate, but before he can deliver the killing blow, Hal uses his legendary willpower to expel his mental intruder. The Justice League then takes Jericho into custody, where Mento monitors him and interrogates him to determine his motivations. Mind blown there, Mike?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm starting to think I might pick this up just for the lols.
Anyway, Superman, long pursued by the media, agrees to give a definitive statement on which candidate he supports. And then he tells everyone that he's not going to tell them who he supports, and he wants to tell everyone to vote because it's one of those really important things that everyone should do. And then we see at the end that he and Lois have gone to vote, and Lois asks him who he voted for, and he still won't tell her. The end.
Right.
Okay. So, all right. So for those of you who don't know, Jericho is a member of the Teen Titans, and his power is he can look at you, and when he looks at you, he sort of locks on, and then his body sort of vanishes, and he's inside your body controlling you, and he can do things that make you do things you don't want to do, you know, which in the new Teen Titans under Wolfman Perez, he was very kind of gentle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and when they turned into a nutcase, they basically said he went mad because he was always connecting with people and he ended up with too many voices in his head. Okay. Right. And then that led him to want to kill all politicians in this race for the presidential election in 2008. Okay.
Okay.
And that's as far as they say with his motivation.
Right.
So he decides to kill all the... You know, I actually thought there was going to be some other clever plot here, whereas, like, someone was doing this deliberately to involve all the superheroes in politics.
Yeah.
It's part of some master plan. And it's like, no.
Wow. Okay.
It's almost as if the writers wanted to involve the superheroes in politics and came up with a way to do it. And that was the intent of all this.
Hmm.
But, I mean... You know, one of the things that ticks me off is, like, Superman is so... There's one point in this comic where Lois is arguing with him and he says, Lois, I forgive you, in the middle of the argument. It's...
Okay.
So, super douche. And then, yeah. But at the end, he's like, you know, we're heroes and, you know... We need to be above politics. We need to be doing what's right for people in general, you know, and we can't... And it's one of those questions that you don't want to ask, like, who would Superman vote for? If you don't want to answer that, don't ask it.
Mm.
You know, we'd be better off not having Superman in the comic at all. You know, like, you can get Guy Gardner's going to, you know, vote for the pro-army guy and, you know, strong America and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Others are going to vote for, you know, minority candidates or people who are going to represent Latinos and things like that. But, you know, yeah, Superman is our figurehead of the company. We can't say which who he would support. Yeah. So it was a strange comic. But, I mean, art throughout. There's pencils by Rick Leonardi and inks by Carl Story and inks by Daniel Green. So it looks like it was rushed fairly through. Howard Porter does two of the issues.
Okay.
And this is Doug Zavisha pointed this out. Howard Porter had had hand injury or something, so this was like his tentative return to comics.
Oh, okay.
Or he got into doing things like Justice League 3000 and mm-hmm. recent years. So this is like it's 9 years ago this comic came out, so quite a while back.
Yeah. I'm curious, were there any existing DC characters running for any of the seats themselves?
No.
Or they're all just new one-off characters?
Just one-off. So, yeah, but you heard things like who would Firestorm support, who would Wildcat support, etc. But let's talk about Mento. So Mento is brought in to sort of go through what's up happening with Jericho. And the Mento in this, he's got a really weird... it looks like he's just come off from the Tour de France.
Oh, dear.
He's got a really big sort of streamlined helmet on, and I don't know why.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's good to see Mento involved. But obviously Bill Willingham or Judd Winnick wanted to involve the Doom Patrol somehow. So but it's interesting because Robot Man and Mento are the only two characters who appear. There's no mention of anyone else from the Doom Patrol.
Is there any reason given as to why Robot Man was in the first issue, like at the first rally, or he just that's never explained?
He was working there.
Okay.
He was in the security for that candidate. So
disguised as a man.
Disguised as a man.
Right.
Man, as we call him. Yeah. So. Yeah, I don't know why. Actually, Beast Boy is in it. Changeling Beast Boy, Gar Logan. He is, okay. But he's in it just basically as a talking head, saying who he would support.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Well, you're right. It does sound like a very odd series, and good on DC for trying something different, I guess. But. Jericho, really?
Yeah, I think this is a comic no one asked for and no one wanted.
Right.
And no one bought, clearly, because it never got collected.
Oh, I'm curious to see what the sales figures of it were.
Yeah. But I am a sucker for a complete story. You know, if you give me all issues of a miniseries, I'm pretty happy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you really fascinated by the Doom Patrol in minor appearances in other places, this could be the miniseries for you.
I guess. Yeah. See, like you, I wasn't really looking back at the art on the covers. Now, I kind of recall seeing it around, but never really being mentioned. And because I love the DC universe so much, and you know, I have a shelf dedicated to like the big crossover events, and you know the stories where everyone's involved. I'm kind of tempted to look for this and add it to the collection, but on the other hand, having heard the story now, I'm kind of like, I don't know.
If you see it cheap, I'd pick it up if I saw it cheap. I saw it once in a Melbourne comic book store, bundled up on the counter in a box.
Mm.
And I think it was like, you know, it was $15 or something. And I thought,
It sounds more like not so much of a must have, but more like a curious diversion.
Yeah. But yeah, it's a comic.
It sure is.
Well, I think I've doom-splained that as best I can.
You've done an admirable job, sir, considering the content. Again, Jericho being the bad guy, I just...
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, there you go.
I would have loved it if Terry Long was actually working with him as well.
You just want the double afro, don't you?
Yeah, double afro. Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe they'll revisit the political arena some way, and maybe then you'll get your wish. Who knows? Oh dear.
All right, Doomsplained.
Yes.
Tick it off.
Well done. Well done.
Thank you. Now it's time for Mailbag O'Doom, and this week we are looking at the responses to our question of the week, which is, coincidentally, which fictional character would you want running your country? And we heard from Dr. Ange first up, Dr. Ange 70 on the Twitter, and he said, the easy answer is Superman, but I'm going for Dream Girl. Precognition would make life a little easier. And he put up a picture of Dream Girl, which most people would vote for her no matter what, I think. Regardless of what she was saying or doing.
I don't know. I guess precognition would make it a little bit easier, but, you know, I'd be wondering into how far into the future she'd be looking.
You would presume that she would run because she knew she was going to win.
Yeah.
That could be a platform. I'm going to win.
Do what you want. I'm going to win. Yeah.
Yeah.
We then heard from Martin Gray, at Mart Gray, and he replied with Sona, because the man has style to spare.
Ah, yes, he's a European leader from a made-upistan.
Mm-hmm.
Was it Moldavia or something? And he has a tuning fork gun, which is one of the notable things. And,
yeah.
And dresses fairly Napoleonically meets superhero, doesn't he?
Yeah, yeah. Just a shame of that the tuning fork gun's destroying everything around him, but, you know.
Yeah.
that'd sort of work against his platform. Anyway.
We heard from Dylan A. Lang, Holodil, on Twitter, and he said, easy, Wonder Woman.
Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, why not?
Yeah. Craig101, at Craig R. McD on the Twitters, said Superman.
Yeah, and he showed a nice picture from Armageddon 2001 annual where Superman becomes president.
Ooh.
Yeah, he can be president because he was technically born in the United States because his spaceship was a birthing matrix.
Right.
So they got around that. So there you go.
Flimsy, but I guess it works.
Anyway, we heard from Jeffrey Brown at Tezugo on Twitter, and he said, I would rather Doom 2099, the Warren Ellis written one. Yeah, why not a competent dictator at this stage?
Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nicholas at Nick RDE said, I'd say Fozzie Bear, but he's real.
Okay. What sort of platform with a Fozzie Bear run?
I don't know.
Statler and Waldorf would be in the debates, I know that.
He's not half bad. Yeah, he's all. Yeah, anyway.
We had from Clinton Robson at Coffee and Comics blog, and he said, my head says, hi, Father of the New Gods is a good call, but let's be honest, all hail Victor Von Doom. The High Father seems a bit hippie. I don't know if I'd want the High Father running things, but. Yeah. Victor Von Doom, under the right circumstances. Let's not speak ill of his name in public.
No, no. Unless you send a Doombot after you. So I gather that you lean more towards competent dictators still.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, yep. Fair enough. Each of their own. We then heard from Sats at Truth Dune. I think this is the first time we've heard from Sats, so thank you for joining us. And he said, Bizarro. Oh, wait, that's the one we have now.
Oh,
Cthulhu Dagon for the win. And he gave us a poster of Cthulhu Dagon running for 2020.
Ah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. They've got their many arms on many issues there.
Yeah. Nice.
We heard from Alejandro Rodriguez at Claymore_smile on Twitter. I don't think this is a new one too.
I think so, yes. Yeah.
Hello, Alejandro. And he said, Tony Stark. Which version?
Well, even with the alcohol, I still think he'd be a good business leader.
He'd probably create something that would destroy us all.
Right.
Anyway.
We then heard from James Hudson at JA Hudson 1313 on Twitter. And he said, Reed Richards, he's a genius, World War II vet, enough said.
World War II vet, but there's the sliding timescale of Marvel. So
yeah.
Then he's a Korean War vet, and then he's a Vietnam War vet, and I don't know what he is now because Marvel doesn't publish Fantastic Four anymore.
No, that's a smart decision.
Yeah.
I say that because they should be publishing them, and they should bring... I wonder if they will return them in the upcoming Legendary event.
Oh, of course they will. Of course they will. It's Marvel saying, oh, come back, everything's cool now. Look, the Fantastic Four are here. Ooh. Anyway, we heard from, on Facebook, we heard from TJ Milky Mixer, and he said, Lil Orphan Annie, ever the eternal optimist. And she would know about poverty. She would understand.
Yes. Jared Driscoll, still on Facebook, also gave us another vote for Dr. Doom. He said, Dr. Doom runs his country with an iron fist. You kind of have to respect that in a weird way.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
All right, Mike, who would you give the reins of power over to?
I'm going to go with Dylan Lang and say Wonder Woman. I think she would be... She's got the wisdom. She's fair. She always tries to talk things through before kicking your ass if troubles are brewing.
She's got the lie detector.
Yeah, there you go. You know that's already in her favor. So I think she'd do her best to try and find a good solution to everything before resorting to fisticuffs, which is I like that. That's something I like about it, even though she gets into a shit ton of fights anyway. But right. Yeah, I think Wonder Woman would be the sensible choice.
Yeah. Okay.
How about you?
I'm going to go on the environmental platform, and I'm going to say Ra's al Ghul for president.
Ooh.
Prime minister, dictator of the world, whatever.
Okay.
But I would hope that he would curb his murderous urges to murder, you know, 3/4 of the population of the planet. But that is a man who would fund climate change research.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I still think he would want to wipe out the majority of humanity and start anew. But you're right. The environment would be in good hands.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry if I've just doomed everyone. I'm sorry.
Oh, look, win some, lose some. You know, there's good and bad with every candidate.
Those of our children that survive will inherit a world that is safe.
Yeah.
Right. Well, we've really fixed that problem there, haven't we?
We have. Just want to give a shout out also to Legacy Brand Comics, who gave us some feedback on last episode, our contribution to the JLMA 2017 event. And they said, enjoyed your participation in JLMA 2017. You seamlessly incorporated the event into your podcast without drastically altering your format. Rita had some really great visual moments this issue. She and Giganta are due for a rematch.
Yeah.
I'd pay to see that rematch, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's one thing we do is we don't change our format. We, no. I don't think we know how to, Mike, do we, at this stage?
Look, if it works, stick with it, you know?
Yeah. Or if it doesn't work and we're sticking with it, we're sticking with it.
Hey.
Nah, it works. It does work. It's good.
It works. Look, episode 96, it's been working so far, you know.
Yeah.
Haven't had any major complaints.
Well, all the men have left, so.
Yeah. They can come back next week.
Yeah. All righty. Well, speaking of next week, what's on the cards?
Well, I know Martin Gray's going to be excited because we're looking back at more Rachel Pollack Doom Patrol, covering issues 70 and 71 of her run.
Oh, that's a notorious issue in there.
Is it?
Codpiece.
Oh, sorry. I got a bit too excited then. Look, for those who are tuning in or joining us, you know, for the first time or just recently, Pollack's run was the first Doom Patrol stuff I got into, and it has a special place in my heart, especially the Codpiece issue, which sounds really bizarre, but because I think that's the issue that also introduces another favorite character of mine from that run.
Yes, I think you're right.
I can't wait. Oh. And do we have a question of the week for next episode?
Okay, yes. This question of the week is, who is your favorite character that hangs out with a team?
Okay.
So not part of the team, hangs out with the team.
Okay. I'm trying to think of one.
You've got a week.
I've got a week. I've got a whole week. Okay.
Got a whole week.
Okay.
Anyway, if you want to get your answer to us, you can send it via Twitter at WFDpod. You can send it via email at waitingfordoom@gmail.com. You can send it via Facebook at the Waiting for Doom Facebook page, or you can drop it on Doug's site, mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. And usually within a few days of putting an episode up, he puts up an accompanying post with nice pictures and things. So you can see these fabulous pictures of Mentos cycling outfit and and getting blown in half and things like that. They'll all be coming soon your way at mygreatestadventure80.blogspot.com. And I think that's it for this show.
It is. Yeah. Thanks again, Paul. Thanks everyone for joining us. And catch you next time for more Waiting for Doom.
Waiting for Doom, ladies.